Hello, cinephiles, and welcome to Indie Outlook, the show that sheds light on must-see cinema from the Windy City and around the globe. I'm your host, Matt Fagerholm of HollywoodChicago.com. Today I'm joined by filmmaker Mike Eisenberg. He's a recent graduate of Tribeca Flashpoint and has already earned praise for his visually arresting work. As founder of Tall Tale Productions, Mike recently completed the acclaimed short film Stitches, which is currently available on Vimeo, and he also serves as junior editor at the McGarry Bowen Agency and is a critic at themoviemash.com. Welcome to the program,
Mike. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, tell me a little bit about Tribeca, because I actually have a few friends that are in there now, and I'm thinking of having some people on the show as well from Tribeca. What was that experience like? Was that always the film, you know, or were you on to get your education in film?
It's interesting because my background wasn't in film, although it was obviously a huge part of my life. And I played baseball professionally, and I had a four-year degree, and I'd done all these other things. And then it was time to kind of get my foot in the door, and Tribeca seemed like the right place to do it. I didn't need four more years of schooling or anything like that. I just wanted to get my foot in the door, a camera in my hand, and get out there and film some stuff. And that seemed like the best place to do it, and I fell in love with the city when I played here. So it was a natural place to go with a two-year education, you know, get in and out. And I did that, and I got really lucky with a lot of the projects and the people I worked with there. And that's really what it was all about, was just, like, meeting new people. I still work with six or seven of them at a time, although they're, like, trickling over to L.A., and I'm losing
one
at a time, and it's really frustrating. But there's some really good people here in the city that love to work, and I've found a lot of them. And that's mostly thanks to Flashpoint and the things that I did there. And because of that place, I got a job right away, which was pure luck. And it's let me kind of balance my independent work with more client-based advertising work, which is actually really an interesting compare and contrast, because they don't compare really at all. But I'm learning a little bit from each thing that's helping me. So it's a good education. I think it's a nice, quick one. And there's some high school graduates in there. There's some college graduates like myself. And so it's a nice mishmash of people. But everybody wants to make movies. So.
Yeah. Well, because you're going between, you know, doing some ads. I thought it was awesome you did something for McHenry County Living, because I'm from McHenry. But that was interesting. And also you did something for the college baseball. It was a true story of the Ed Express, this book as well. And so it seems like you can go between ads and film. And in both cases, it's kind of visually seducing the audience in a way. So I guess there's a similarity in the approach, I suppose, between, you know, client-based work and then your personal work.
Yeah. And I think, well, those two things that you mentioned our personal work, although they're advertising something. The work I do at McGarry Bowen is much more, it's client-based, but it's internal, you know? And so that stuff is more of my job, and I get to learn a little bit about the industry in a different way. And it just gets me, I'm more comfortable with the camera, everything I do there, more comfortable with editing everything I do there. The McHenry County Living thing and the Edit Express, which is the baseball team I played for in college.
Oh, nice.
They're just like side projects that I think are really fun and a way to engage an audience that's already there, which is fun and a little easier. And a chance to get some paid work to help me work Tall Tale Productions. Because I mean, we started that from nothing. And as most people who've at least tried to start up any kind of business know, it costs a lot more than it does, than you would think in the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're in the red. And like, and this isn't an industry where money just comes pouring through.
No,
and
not at all.
So we've really fought to get work and things like those projects. And some ones that have just finished and are coming up are nice. They let us keep working.
Now, does Tall Tale Productions, does that also do, you know, some of the more, you know, like the advertisements as well as film? So that kind of bridges both of those worlds.
Yeah, well, you know, it's one of those sort of calling ourselves a full-service studio, although we're that kind of do-it-yourself, low-maintenance studio. We can do everything. We all have experience in different aspects of filmmaking. So we're making our own narratives like Stitches. And we are trying to get clients who are interested in that kind of, let's do it, let's get it done. We don't have to pay big bucks, but, you know, we charge, like, really low amounts, and people still come to us, which is great.
Sure.
Because we're just doing, we're doing good work, and we're trying to make it the kind of thing that people want to come work with us because they can afford it, and because we don't give a product that looks like the cost, you know, of the actual production.
Sure, exactly.
So, you know, little projects on the side. It's just like, you know, Scorsese says it all the time. He does advertisements to pay for the movies he wants to make.
Sure.
And, you know, that's a pretty obvious approach, and that's kind of what I'm doing. And, you know, having a full-time job helps me maintain my life.
Absolutely.
But as an individual filmmaker, as an independent artist, obviously I'm trying to make the next great story that I can come up with. But I can't do that unless we get the funds.
Yeah. Well, even I was just talking to Todd Solondz, who did Happiness, films like that, and he's now working, you know, as a teacher in New York as well to kind of, like, you know, get funding for his work. So it really doesn't matter, even if your films are greatly celebrated, there always seems to be difficult to actually have a career as a filmmaker. It seems like there's, like, you know, unless you're, like, right at the top of, like, the mainstream, you know, work for hire sort of thing.
I totally agree, and I think if you look at most successful filmmakers, they're not 27 or younger than that. You know, you have to be able to put in the time, not only to build a brand, but also to get noticed and to just become a better filmmaker. Mm-hmm. You know, there are the guys who just hit it big really early and they got really lucky. And there's a lot of people who are just as talented as some of the filmmakers who are 40 years old and making it big now.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going to get seen for 10, 15 years. And I think that's the thing that a lot of people under 30 don't realize.
You're
not going to make it big yet. But if you don't keep working and, you know, creating things, then you're never going to make it big.
Yeah.
And whether that's your end goal or not, it's irrelevant. It's just if you don't keep making things, whether it's an advertisement for a big client or an advertisement for a magazine in the suburbs of Chicago or your own short story, you're not going to go anywhere unless you start making things. And it is interesting because, you know, a lot of people say, well, if you want to make something, then just go make it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that easy, and everybody will tell you that. It is easy if you have a camera to just go pick it up and film something, but if you really want to tell stories, then you have to sit back, find the one that means something to you, and then find the best way to tell that story. That's what we did with Stitches, which was something where we ended up deciding to raise as much money as we could. We did great on our fundraising with Kickstarter and things like that.
So you recommend Kickstarter to other filmmakers as well?
You know what? That was my first time really using it, and I totally endorse it. But at the same time, if you really look at our fundraising, like 60% of it was family.
Sure. Oh, totally, yeah.
So there's a lot of luck involved, but it's mostly your own ability to advertise yourself. That I think is the most interesting part of the learning experience for me. Is I'm not afraid to go talk about my work to people. I'm not going to tell them it's good. It's up to them to decide that. But I'm definitely not afraid to tell somebody that I'm working on this, I'm working on that. Come watch this short film that I made. Would you like to talk about it? This and that. And some of the other people who worked on the film with me would never do that.
Sure.
Not
even
exactly. If you paid
them. It's a certain kind of person. Yeah.
They're scared of like just talking in general. And that's totally fine. And being behind the camera, you get that luxury.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and as a lead-in to Stitches, where you're saying it's you have to find a story in your life, and this feels like a personal story. It might be completely false, but it seems like this came from a personal place. You already said that your interest in baseball has been something throughout your life, and it seemed like this was a love letter to a grandfather, or a grandfather type, perhaps, in your life.
Kind of. Yeah. When we were developing it, the thing that I kept stressing was that I just wanted to make sure that we had a movie that's kind of gave a voice to the people who weren't comfortable speaking about their problems or not problems, but their experiences in life, the people who can't maybe put a story to their experiences. And I've been through what's happened on that screen with my father, not my grandfather, but the writer, I think, has experienced something very close to it as well. And so and I helped, you know, develop it into a story that maybe had a little bit more of myself in it, but you know, Mitch Kep, who wrote it, it's his screenplay.
Mm.
And I felt it as a very real thing when I read it. And it came out of I wanted to make a feature about my experiences but kind of form it in a coming of age story.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
He said, I have this thing that's kind of similar to what you're talking about. And I read it and I liked it. And I added two little things that I thought were a little bit more of what I really wanted to share. And I think it does come across as a very personal film because most of the people involved had felt something similar to what the character had felt.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried really hard to not make it feel like a film that is only about what happens in that character's life. Mm-hmm. That it's something that people can relate to because it's broad enough by having limited dialogue or having it just be more universal things like death. Not just like, oh, this character and this person, and then he loses that person, and we only care about how he reacts.
Sure.
You know.
Well, there's so much going on in that main character. It's about a young boy dealing with loss in his life, and it's just like this beautiful little character vignette. And when you're dealing with a child actor and not trying to have it be like an actorly performance, was that a challenge for, you know, as a director? Was that a challenge to kind of or find the right person to work with?
Well, I love working with kids and animals. Which most people will say the opposite. Love it. I think it's fun, and it keeps me having a good time.
Do you like the unpredictability of it, or do you just like...
I don't think it's that unpredictable. No. I think they're actually way easier to predict than a grown-up who has this whole career behind them that's doing what they think is right because they've done it for long enough.
You're
I think a kid is easy to quote-unquote manipulate, you know? And if you know how to talk to a kid, then they'll do whatever for your movie. And animals too. I mean, you just need to hold a treat. It's easy.
Sure.
So I like working with kids and animals, but if you kind of look at most of my work, there's actually a lot of that in there.
Remember there was a dog in one of those? Yeah.
I definitely put my dog out there. Funny. The kid that we cast, you know, we thought, oh, we're going to have to go through thousands of kids. You know, they always talk about, oh, we auditioned 4,000 kids. Mm-hmm. The fourth kid that we saw was him. It was just the character. And ironically, that kid's mom had approached us before we even started casting, saying, I heard about this movie you're making. It sounds like my kid would be perfect for it.
Really? Huh.
We saw his headshot. We saw his background. He's from Kids Bop.
Oh, really?
Kids Bop?
No, I'm not familiar.
Kids Bop
with
is
that.
Like the Mickey Mouse Club of today. It's like they remix really popular songs for kids.
Oh,
and
cool.
If you look at it, you would not think that this kid is built for a dramatic role that's very serious.
Sure.
But when he came in, and first of all, his excitement for the role was inspiring to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
And then he comes in and he nailed it. We were just blown away by this kid's performance in an audition. And we knew he obviously had camera experience because he's done these videos and he's a sort of mini celebrity in the kids' world.
Mm-hmm.
And we were really excited about working with him. He's nothing like you would expect from a sort of pop star, you know,
sure,
and I don't want to
sure.
call him that because he's totally not that kid at all. And it's great because, you know, when I talk to his mom and his dad, who are great, just as supportive, not pushy, they're just great parents. The whole family is so easy to work with, and that just makes your job easier, and this is a full package, and you just want to work with the kid, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about, he's a musician, we talked about doing other music videos with him. Like, I just want to keep working because he likes to work, his family loves to be a part of it, and people like that are hard to come by, let alone 13-year-olds. So it was really, we got really lucky with this kid, and our casting director Alex Pachocki was just like, helped us out from the start in casting SAG talent, and that's never easy either as an independent film, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we put our time in finding the characters that fit, and I think that they all look the part of a family and they all are very comfortable on camera. And it helps when you have a script that doesn't have a lot of dialogue, that's a little limited, and allows them to just kind of be in the moment and let the audience fill in the gaps, which I would much rather see. I prefer movies that do that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that, especially for a drama, I don't need to tell people how they feel about something that they've already felt.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly. Well, that's a beautifully restrained piece of work from that young actor. What's his name again?
His name's Stefan Argus. I forgot
to
say that.
That's right. I just want to make sure his name got on there. But this killed me when I read this. There's a scene in this film where the kids are at, I think it's a science class, and they're just projecting images of space. And it just it captures kind of the groggy sort of feeling you get when a teacher turns. It took me right back to grade school where they just turn off the lights and it's like some film recycled from the 1970s. And everyone's just kind of, that's that weird, echoey, like inhuman voice in the room. And I mean, I've been there. Everyone's been there.
Oh, yeah.
And then I realized that you actually filmed, like this wasn't actual space footage. Like you actually filmed this footage. And you were inspired by Douglas Trumbull's, you know, the space imagery that he has in, 2001 and Tree of Life recently. And I thought that was fascinating. I mean, you actually see it in one of your websites, Galactic Heights is the name of the short.
Yeah.
So what made you kind of want to take a cue from Trumbull and try to find your – because I think you were doing experiments in an aquarium or something to get those shots.
Well, it was actually in – it was – no, I don't think it was in the original script, the science film side of things. I wanted to show this kid in a normal environment. I think we added the whole classroom scene. And I wanted to – the movie is not very existential at all, but I always think those are fun.
Yeah.
So I wanted to throw in a little nugget of existentialism, like super heady, pompous thing, without it being sort of me telling the audience that it's that science film that thinks it's that.
So
I went all out and I wrote the script in the most the script for that guy in the most heady way, and it's and it's Greg Holloman, who's a pretty well known Chicago actor. Basically, it was a matter of, well, do we buy stock footage? Do we even show it? No, I'm going to make this darn thing. I want to make it. Why not? I have all this time to prep for this movie. I can spend a couple of nights just playing around. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work, you know? So $35-$40 of random things. I bought gobstoppers, chocolate balls, just food coloring.
Was that some of the color pigment too?
Yeah,
that
you, I didn't do any color correction to it, and it was just like it's all natural. And so it's 2 a.m. on a Saturday night, and my girlfriend and dog are asleep, and I'm right there with my aquarium and two lights, both like two 1K lights, and I'm holding them while I had the camera underneath the aquarium set up and attached to a TV so that I could monitor everything. And I'm just playing around with things.
That's awesome.
And, like, while it was happening, everyone's asleep, and, like, something really exciting would happen. I'd go, oh. I'd try to hold in my screams because it was so exciting. It was so much fun.
It looks great.
Yeah, I mean, throughout the process of doing it, just things would just happen. And, you know, I had done a little research. I looked at how Doug Trumbull had done Tree of Life, and I knew that it was – a half and half practical and VFX. And I knew that there was no VFX going to happen here. I didn't have that capability, and I wasn't ready to waste time on it. So I just played with things. I mean, he used a high-speed camera and, like, 10K of lights. Obviously, I didn't have that. So I just played around, threw things in there. I knew – the only thing I knew is that when gobstoppers get wet, they sort of, like, melt away, and that's what created a really cool effect. And so if you watch that thing, you know, it's not doesn't do it justice in the movie because it's not supposed to. It's not about that. But it was really fun to make. And if you watch it, I called it Galactic Heights for – I just don't know. It's part of the script. And this is a fun thing. I threw it out on the internet before we even made Stitches to see if I couldn't maybe use it as some buzz for the movie. And it did pretty well. I mean, I got like – I got a few thousand hits out of it. It was not viral or anything, but – you know, I thought maybe Vimeo would pick it up as a staff. But those kinds of things are just super fun to me. Experimenting and having fun doing it with, I mean, there's no risk involved at all. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Who cares?
Well, when I saw that scene, it reminded me of something that you previously said to me, where because I met you at a screening of Moonrise Kingdom, the new Wes Anderson film. And you, when that film ended, you said, you know, there's no one out there that can make a movie that looks like a Wes Anderson movie. And you said even Terrence Malick, and Terrence Malick is touted as one of the great living filmmakers. I think that'd probably be a fair assessment, but
I'd agree.
You know, they said that, you know, I mean, you said that even Terrence Malick, even the people have made a movie that looks like a Terrence Malick movie. And I thought that was interesting because then I'm seeing you make imagery that looks pretty much very similar to some of that, the imagery in Tree of Life. So it was almost like you were kind of, were you almost kind of proving to yourself that you could make a movie that looked in kind of the imitation of that?
Well, I think with Terrence Malick, you know, his style is unique, but not just to him. It's the way he tells his stories that he's branded it his own, and he's stuck to it. But anybody can do it. All you need is some nice nature, you know, like a good camera.
And a spectacular cinematographer who can get these naturalistic moments.
Totally, but I think that also has a lot to do with the way he puts his stories together and the way that they're really enigmatic and they don't care or cater to the audience at all. It's about filling the whole movie from start to finish as one full thought and lots of little various ideas throughout it so that you can form your own opinion. And, you know, even his early work, which was a little less Terrence Malick-y.
Exactly.
It still has that sort of, like, balance, and Days of Heaven even, to an extent. They're pretty direct for his work. So, and I'm excited to see what he's coming up with, because he's never done as much as he's doing right now. He's got like three films developing.
Yeah,
once.
I think Tree of Life like recharged his creative batteries, and so he's really. I'm very excited to see what he does next.
But like you were saying with Wes Anderson's work, you know, if you do that, it is a Wes Anderson cop. I mean, it's like.
If you have Terrence those like Miller. Symmetrical pans or
right.
something like that, or kind of
totally
perfectly color coordinated costumery, and everyone's hitting their mark exactly at the same point. Yeah.
I have fun with his visual style myself when I do like goofy videos. Did one that I put on the internet called I think Editor from Above, where I just did like a goofy thing. I was totally inspired by Wes Anderson, but. It was inspired by Wes Anderson, period. It was no original idea at all in the making of that. And
sure,
it's just to see how he does it and experience it like he does it. And I think it's just so much fun because when you're watching a Wes Anderson movie, you know exactly what he's doing. You know that he's dollying left to right. You know exactly where he's going to end up. And it's almost like during that dolly move, you're like, okay, you're going to stop right now. And he stops and you love it. And you know exactly what he's going to do. Because he does the same thing over and over again, but you love it every time because there's a certain you can tell how much he loves doing it, and you can tell how much and just have fun because his movies have an element of fun to them, even though they're kind of dark.
Yeah,
you know. So
well, he doesn't get away from you know like the melancholy edge to the you know the character, especially the ones that are more misanthropic or going through a midlife crisis and things like that. Oh. I mean, that's why with a film like Life Aquatic. That film is fascinating. It's probably the one I've seen the most of his work, and yet it's not my favorite at all. Like, because it's just so, it's a weird dichotomy between these beautiful, bright, almost childlike imagery, you know, these stop motion effects, and you're dealing with these very depressed, you know, middle aged people. It's a weird balance. And I felt like with Moonrise Kingdom, his style really caught fire more than I've ever seen, or at least in recent years, because I felt like, having a child, because the film's about, you know, two kids who fall in love, and one's a scout and one's a girl who's, you know, has all these fights with her parents, and she suffers from anxiety and things like that. And they just kind of meet, and it's just like this summer they'll remember forever. It's a beautiful little movie. But I felt like looking at the world through a childlike perspective, making that the center of the film, it really made sense from the Wes Anderson voice. I just felt like his style made more sense to me in that context.
Totally agree. I think... when you look at a director like that, a lot of them, they hit their peak or they get really successful when they cater to what audiences want. Hmm. Like, I love Woody Allen. Mm-hmm. I do. And I think Midnight in Paris was an outstanding movie. It deserved every penny
it
got.
Yeah. I agree.
But there's a certain element to it while I was watching it that I was thinking, he's kind of taking a step aside in order to make a little more popularized version of what he's usually making.
Mm-hmm.
I almost felt like it was a popularized version of it. And I didn't hate it at all for that. I just felt that way.
There was something lost, and I was wondering, is it because it's he feeling in his later years that all of a sudden he's gaining this newfound hope? Like, I felt like it was almost like a pep talk to him. There's a line Kathy Bates says where she's like, you know, life is pointless. If you think life is pointless, find a point. And I felt like it was almost like him talking to himself, like, find a happy ending.
All his movies, I think, talks
to
himself.
Yeah, exactly. You know, talks to himself. But I felt like, because he's always gone on about Hannah and her sisters, the ending of that's a cop-out. It shouldn't have been a... you know, that happy of an ending, and you're wondering is he softening, or is this him again catering to popular interests?
Yeah.
Because it reminded me of Purple Rose of Cairo, his 1985 film, which everyone the producer said this is going to be the biggest hit of your career, just change the ending. He didn't, you know.
Well, I think he understands audiences. He's been doing it long enough,
and
now he's doing this, he has this new one that's out now, the Rome one,
to Rome with love. And he hates the title, and the studio, he let the studio change the title because they want to make it more marketable.
It's like he's just like, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm going to just use this business to travel the world. And that is part of the great perk of the business, is
sure.
that you get a chance to experience things you never would have done as an audience member or a filmmaker. And I think Wes Anderson took advantage of that because his style is just perfect for a 1960s set movie.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah.
It is. I mean, all of his movies feel like they're just stripped from the 60s and thrown in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And they're great for that. We love it because that's what makes it unique and quirky. Or whatever, and actually putting it in the 60s exactly where it belonged.
Yeah.
And I think that's why people appreciate it so much. Even the people who have to make the point that it's the most Wes Anderson-y movie of Wes Anderson's career, I even appreciate it. It's not said in a negative tone at all. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people out there I know that do not like his movies at all, and they loved it. Mm-hmm. They loved it. My girlfriend included, she hates his movies. Well, I don't know if she hates them, but she does not like his movies. Warmed up right to it. And, you know, I think that that's something that has a lot to do with it's a universal theme. You know, Stitches did this. I tried to do that with Stitches. And I think the films that speak to the most people are the ones that deal with something that everybody can understand right away. They understand mm-hmm. child love. They understand death. They understand I was trying to think of how we would understand Dark Knight.
Oh, sure.
Or like a big movie.
Exactly.
You know, but there's just like finding a universal theme is probably the hardest thing to do when you're making a movie, I think, mm-hmm. Because you want it to be specific and unique and only stay within your story's boundaries. But you have to find a way for the audience to enjoy it because that's who you make movies for. I know mm-hmm. some people say otherwise, and that's fine. I personally come from the idea of, well, you make a movie for people to see it, tree falls in a forest type philosophy.
Sure, I mean, sure.
I love the creative process. I love being on set. I love just making something. But when it's done, I'm not going to shove it aside, throw it in the corner, and wait for nobody to see it. Like, Take This Waltz. Did you see that?
Oh, I will be seeing that soon, yeah.
Yeah, it's on demand, so I got a chance to just watch it from the comfort
yes.
of my couch.
It's the new Sarah Polley film, Sarah. And,
yeah,
and,
no, that's right. Yeah. I personally hated it.
Oh, really?
Because I don't like movies about infidelity. I think they're just cheap. And I think they always...
Just in general or just the
lot
of the ones that you've seen?
I have liked movies about them. But I just think the whole movie's premise, and the trailer gives it away, it's not like a spoiler or anything, is about a woman struggling between her own husband and some new guy, right? And like this guy, just to stay on topic, this guy... He's an artist who literally never lets anything he makes out of the apartment, right?
Sure.
I hated that. I was like, oh, my gosh, you're crazy.
It's just a conceit that just
yeah.
that gets on
I
your skin.
I get it, though.
Sure,
I mean,
sure.
Some people just need that escape. Mm-hmm. But don't you want to see people's faces when they watch your work? Like, it aches me inside that I don't get to hire, like, some infrared camera operator.
Is it, you actually
so want to
see the audience.
Yeah.
You're
I want to see them cry or laugh. I mean, there's no greater feeling than, like, for instance, in Stitches, there's this little moment when the teacher's asleep in the classroom scene.
Yeah.
And
it's a great cutaway shot. Yeah.
Everybody wanted me to cut that, and I did not do it because I felt like there was a really important need for people to at least laugh once in this thing.
Sure.
Because it's a somber movie. And like, when people laugh at that moment, we've had two screenings, and I've been at both, and listening to a group of people laugh, and then, like, 10 seconds later, they go, ooh. Is just the best feeling.
Yeah, that's so gratifying, and that's right. And that's why filmmakers, you know, Hitchcock said, like, to play a, you know, audience like a piano or something like that. I mean, I think that's one of the great things is when you can you really have gotten the audience within your world. Yeah. You've really, you know,
well,
found a way.
Even Terrence Malick, you know, he's the opposite where you don't want to hear a peep.
Yeah.
Like when I'm in a Terrence Malick movie, when I was in Tree of Life, my favorite thing was when nobody was saying or breathing.
Yeah.
You couldn't hear a thing. I loved that.
Yeah,
I thought that was the greatest thing as an audience member. I love that, you know.
Absolutely, and I think the great triumph of Moonrise Kingdom is that it plays differently to different audiences. But it is really, I think it is his most accessible film, or at least the one that I can think of in recent memory. Because you can go and just enjoy it for just the comedy and the sweetness.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you are into film, I mean, you're counting how long is Bob Balaban going to be talking in this monologue, and then the instant he turns off that light, the boats enter the frame. I mean, you're just like amazed at the depth of the choreography. You know, and how they can keep the dialogue, you know, in this very deadpan, you know, naturalistic tone and still have it choreographed to these kids swinging on ropes in the background. I mean, I don't know how
great
he
filmmakers
does it.
Can do that.
Yeah,
you know? Great filmmakers can have a kid standing over a trampoline and you say to yourself, he's going to jump on that trampoline, and he does it and it's still funny.
Yeah.
Or the top is spinning.
Yes.
And you're like, he's going to cut before that darn thing falls.
In,
I know
Inception,
it.
Inception, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, those are my favorite kinds of filmmakers, and the ones that I think I aspire to be like are the ones that people know exactly what I'm going to do, but it still surprises them, and they still love it, and they still want to see more of it. And at the same time, when they leave the theater, they still have something to talk about.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
Anderson did that with Moonrise Kingdom, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, and hopefully we get a chance to do that with our work. I think all of us independent filmmakers want to do that.
Yes, absolutely.
Especially with short films.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah. And then how can you capture an audience's attention and really give them a resonant experience in 14 minutes? I think that's what Stitches does. I really do. I think it's a lovely movie. So thank you so much for being on the program. I'd love to have you on again. We could talk about this stuff for hours. And for all my recent reviews and interviews, you can visit HollywoodChicago.com. And for Mike's reviews, visit TheMovieMash.com. And also to check out his film work, see TallTaleProductions.com and EisenbergFilms.com. That concludes today's episode of Indie Outlook. I'm your host, Matt Fagerholm, and I invite you to tune in next time for more coverage of the latest and greatest in modern independent cinema. Till then, I'll be on the lookout.